Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to our weekly Lambeth Sky Regional Council COVID-19 response call. Before we get started, just want to go over a few housekeeping matters. Everyone will be muted on the call. If you would like to participate, present a question, you can use the chat box. You can also text my number, which is area code 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216. This call is being recorded. We want you to know that, and I don't think I introduced myself. I'm Nathan Ramsey with Lambeth Sky Regional Council. Today we're going to we've been trying to hold these calls on a weekly basis to allow for information sharing and to provide opportunities for our region to share best practices and to determine skill gaps, access gaps that we have during our response to COVID-19. We understand it's a rapidly changing time, and many organizations, individuals, families are having to adapt to a new reality. So we appreciate you joining us, and I'll turn it over to Drew Christie with the governor's office. Before I turn it over to Drew, though, I want to let those that are joining the call, and if you would like to speak, if you're on a joining us via phone, I can't necessarily identify you by your phone number. So if you could just text me to let you to let us know, that way we can unmute you if you're scheduled to be a presenter. And again, if you have any questions, text me at 828-768-3216, or you can enter that into the chat box. So we'll get started. Again, we want to thank Drew Christie with the governor's office. We're always, Drew's been really faithful to join these calls, give us an update from Governor Cooper's office and what's happening at the state level. So I'll turn it over to Drew, and Drew, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Nathan, for having me, and thank you, Lambeth Sky Regional Council, for hosting this, and thanks, everyone, for being so attentive and joining all these calls. Today at 3 p.m., the governor will be holding a press conference. You can see it on UNCTV, or you can view the web stream, and I'll post that in the chat box. So if you're not at home, you'll be able to view it on your laptop or mobile device. Last week, Governor Cooper presented an immediate needs budget recommendation for how the state can spend the $1.4 billion in federal funding that has come from the CARES Act. I know that the legislature is currently in session, and I think the House has it's $1.7 billion funding package, and so they'll be proceeding with that. That's pretty much all I have. Again, the governor is holding the press conference today. He'll cover some more statistics and what's going on. But a couple numbers I'll give you here. As of yesterday, North Carolina had 9,948 positive cases for the coronavirus, and unfortunately 354 deaths. So we're taking into account all the metrics and looking to see how we can work to open the state and move into phase 1 and then move into phase 2 and phase 3 after that. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Nathan.
Thank you so much, Drew, and we appreciate your update. And the focus of today's call is really following the governor's announcement last week that public schools will remain in a virtual session, that students will not be actually going back to a physical classroom for the remainder of this school year. I thought it'd be appropriate and really critical to bring our school K-12 public school leaders together, and so for them to share what they're facing, what their faculty, teachers, staff are working with to try to make sure that their students are receiving the best education possible in this new normal. So I know it's caused many difficulties for our local school systems, And we certainly commend you for the leadership on our region's behalf. I think we have Dr. Jeff McDerris with Transylvania County Schools. And Dr. McDerris, we're going to go ahead and unmute you and allow you to go first, if that's okay.
Well, sure, I'm honored. Thank you for having me here, Nathan. I know some of my colleagues are here. I haven't looked at the entire screen, but I know that Bo and Tony are here. We've had a number of meetings. In general, this is something that really has highlighted a lot of different issues that we were aware of, but I think have ramifications for not just education, but really a lot of things that we hope to accomplish over time in our region. For us, the challenge with remote learning is that this has been an ongoing thing. It hasn't been temporary. It's every day. Our teachers are working very hard. They are trying to maintain their families at home, but at the same time, they're trying to work with students. You can't replace the art and craft of a teacher in a classroom with students with just online learning. But what you can do is to try to make that experience as robust as possible. And I think we're seeing some phenomenal work by all of our teachers in all of our counties. They're to be commended. It's a lot of hard work. They're working hard every day. They're tired. And, you know, students are participating, but it's not the same. And some are more engaged than others. That engagement part in part is related to some issues beyond our control. For example, some students are in more stable households than others. Some students have more encouragement at home than others. We know that. But one of the biggest pieces that is challenging for all of us is connectivity. They may or may not have adequate broadband, or maybe they could not afford it. We've done some pretty creative things, all of us. We have, broadcasting in proximity to our schools, and some of the local businesses and establishments are as well. And we certainly appreciate the Dogwood Trust, some of the things that they've done for us. Like locally, we have some giant mobile units that are mounted on certain buses as they go out to deliver meals into the community. And so this is helping, but students, many of them don't have the connection. And if they have a connection, quite frankly, it may not be very fast. And so that makes it a challenge, because if you want to do some really robust things, it's going to require a lot of broadband. We're concerned about the social emotional aspect of our students. You know, I know that people are worried about grades and progress, and we certainly are too. Absolutely we are. But when we are able to see our students again for the first time, quite frankly, the first thing we need to do is to get them in and see how they are and love on them a little bit, because they haven't been around anyone in a while. And they're going to have, you hear the controversy over summer slide, where they're going to have the COVID slide, because they haven't had regular instruction from March all the way up now till August. And so there's a lot of things that are being talked about in the legislature. We're eagerly anticipating those possibly helping. And we're continuing to feed students every day. Our county is a little bit smaller than some of them. We're more probably in line with maybe Asheville City or Madison, but we're feeding about 1,400 students a day, 1,400 meals a day in our county. I'll pause there, because I don't want to steal the thunder for my colleagues, but that's sort of an overview for Transylvania County. But we're plugging along, and learning never stops.
Dr. McDerris, thank you for giving us that update. And we know all our school systems are doing amazing things to try to provide meals for your students this difficult time. A lot of the students, oftentimes, the best part of their day are when they're at school, because unfortunately they may not have the home support that they may need. And you mentioned connectivity. Erica Anderson and Sarah Nichols with Land of Sky are on this call, and later on they'll provide an update on where we are on broadband and the work that's happening to try to make sure more of your students do have access to internet connection and broadband connectivity. In a past world, you could go into a public library or some type of public space, but those places are closed due to COVID-19 now. I would like to introduce Bo Caldwell, Superintendent of Henderson County Schools. Superintendent Caldwell, thank you for joining us today. I want to thank you and your team for the amazing work that you do each and every day and in this difficult environment. So I'd like to turn this call over to you right now, and you can share anything that you would like on behalf of Henderson County Schools.
Sure. Thank you, and thank you for the time. And I'm so honored to be superintendent of Henderson County right now for the work of our entire staff, just like the other superintendents are so proud of their staffs in their school system. When we first heard that the governor was going to close schools, there was so much uncertainty at the time, just like everyone else, what was going to happen. And I know that as a staff, we met and we made three commitments. Number one is to feed our children, just like Jeff said. Food insecurity doesn't stop. It doesn't stop on the weekends, and it doesn't stop for COVID-19. Kids need food and they're hungry. Right now, we are a larger system. We are serving over basically 7,000 meals a day throughout Henderson County. We're over 30,000 plus a week. And we didn't stop. We didn't stop over spring break. We're doing the best we can to reach every child possible with food. And I'm so proud of our child nutrition staff and the work that they are, the work they're doing. The second thing we rolled our sleeves up is child care. We continued our child care in Henderson County for medical personnel, hospital employees, children, first responders, children. We've been running four sites and taking families from Party Hospital, Advent Health, emergency management, to keep those people who are on the front line working. It's a free service that we're offering through our school system to those because we feel like that's what we need to do. And as Jeff said, learn from home. This was new for everybody. It was new for us as a school system, and it was new for parents as well. You know, Nathan, years ago, you used to hear the no child left behind. Now it's no child offline, because I've got the same thing Jeff has got. We spent, I think, $15,000 with huge mail outs to those kids who didn't have from kindergarten through 12th grade, mailing books, mailing assignments, everything else that we possibly could to reach those children who, like you said, don't have connectivity. Some places, hotspots won't even work. Just due to the fact that there's no cell phone where they can even get reception. So we're doing the best we can with those students to make sure that we do all to touch base with them to enhance their education during this time. Now the governor has basically made the announcement that students will not be coming back to our buildings for the remainder of the year. This all of a sudden, now we got to close out. And then the next question is what's next? What does a re-entry look like for our school system? And there's still, I guess it's one hurdle, but we still looking down that line. If you're on track, there's several more hurdles we've got to get over till we finish this long race. So that's kind of what's happening in Henderson County.
Superintendent Caldwell, thank you for that update. And I'd like to now turn it over to Dr. Tony Baldwin with Buncombe County Schools. And I'm sure many of the same themes are true in Buncombe County as the other school systems in our region. But Dr. Baldwin, thank you for joining us, and we appreciate the work of you and your team.
We appreciate the opportunity to address the group, Nathan. And Jeff and Bo have done a really good job of really expressing the concerns and challenges for all of us here in Region 8. I think the great thing is we are connected, we are meeting, we are discussing, we are sharing. It's hard to believe we are in week seven, completing week seven since our schools were closed. And similar to Bo and Jeff, you know, the operations that we currently have going on will continue through the end of this school year. And also several will be continuing into the summer. I was looking at numbers this morning, and over this 7-week period, we have provided meals to our students and families. Over 563,000 1,000 meals. I think that's just incredible that we've been able to do that and both Jeff and Bo, similar to us, we began that the day one that schools were closed. I think that's what's so phenomenal. We never missed a beat with that. Virtual instruction has certainly been challenging, and Bo and Jeff both again talked about the challenges that we have, but that continues on. Got so many comments from parents about how creative our teachers have been, because again, this is really the first provision of virtual instruction that we have had in Buncombe County Schools. But we're so proud, again, of all of our teachers and staff. One thing that we created early on was what we call a family resource center. We have a fairly large number of homeless students and families, and some very high at-risk students that are located all over Buncombe County. And thus far, we've been providing over 350 home deliveries of food. We do that on a daily basis, going out to all the nooks and crannies and coves in Buncombe County and making sure that those families that have the highest needs are reached. And one last thing tied into economic development, and again, my colleagues across Region 8, it's just been amazing since we closed schools, Nathan, that I think all of us have been able to maintain our employees and keep them whole. And as we see across in other organizations and businesses and the challenges, we've been able to keep our employees hired and having full paychecks. And, you know, I think all of us are dedicated to continuing this regardless of what the challenges that lie ahead for us. So, again, thank you for the opportunity. And I'm just so proud in this region to have colleagues like Jeff and Bo and all the superintendents. And we're just doing some wonderful things.
Thank you so much, Dr. Baldwin, for that update. And we're grateful. I know y'all face many challenges during this time. I don't think it's something that any of us have ever experienced in our lifetime. And so, you know, you're meeting that critical need in this new environment. We're going to unmute the phones for Superintendent Caldwell and Dr. McDerris. So I just want to ask y'all a few questions. You know, number one, what's the biggest need that maybe we're not meeting, or things that our community can do to support our local schools at this time? Because I think there are a lot of people out there that would, businesses and others, that want to support the work you're doing. And where are those unmet needs, and how can we be more helpful to helping you address those?
Well, first of all, I know it's the same for my colleagues. You know, our local partners have been just great. I mean, you know, we work closely with the health department, you know, county government entities. We have a tremendous partnership with our sheriff's department. We have SROs that are assisting with us on some different things, and so. There's a lot of effort out there with people from different agencies that are helping out, even distributing some meals. It's difficult to answer that, Nathan, for me, because we don't know yet. This is going to sound kind of odd. We don't know yet what we don't know. And what I mean by that is we have a lot of students who we are reaching out to them and trying to maintain contact. Because it's not just the learning, as I said earlier, it's their well-being, and our teachers are doing a great job with that, but we don't really know how they are completely, and we won't know that until we're able to come back together. And you know, I want you to think about something. All of us experienced what a high school graduation is like, and you may or may not have loved your senior year in high school, But, you know, there were some memories there that you take with us, take with you. Our seniors are not going to get to do that. This is a totally new experience. They didn't get to have a prom. They didn't get to have time with their friends. They didn't get to talk about what they're going to do in the future. And so there is really some emotional aspect of this that I don't want to be diminished or overlooked. And, you know, we're going to try to make that as special as we can. But I guess for me, we don't know yet what we don't know. And our reentry, I know Bo is on a reentry committee with the Superintendent's Association. Our reentry, whenever that comes about, is going to be quite interesting because, you know, we on any given day, our schools are the location of the largest group of individuals in one area that there are in a county. And so that's something that we're already planning for, but I don't know if I answered your question, but that's my answer.
You did well. Superintendent Caldwell, what are the things that our community can support you and what's the greatest need that you see that we may be able to improve on what we're doing now?
Well, you know, I say this all the time. I want everything that Dr. Baldwin gets at Buncombe, but just twice as much. I'm just kidding. I think Dr. McDaniels, Jeff said it so well. You know, if you ask me what I need right now, Mr. Ramsey, right now, I think for us to finish up strong, and you mentioned this, is we're still lacking the connectivity. If every kid is going to be successful on an education, we've got to do what we can. Now we have gotten some hot spots. I had roughly 70 seniors that we had to get hot spots for as quick as we can, so they could take AP tests. And you think because the AP test was online this year, and we had 70 kids that did not have connectivity, but yet wanted to take tests. So that was our first priority. I've got seniors right now that I still don't have hotspots enough for, we're struggling to get them to graduate. And right now it's because they're doing paper and pencil and we're trying to keep up with them. But it is so much nicer and so much, if we're going to stay on this virtual world, and that's just what Jeff was saying, is we don't know what we don't know, is how long are we going to be on this virtual world? And connectivity is huge for us. Absolutely. Yeah, we've done what we could. We've upgraded our connectivity in our parking lots around our school. You could go to a school and sit in a parking lot, and we've increased that. But unfortunately, the children, a lot of times, who don't have the connectivity also don't have transportation to that school, this parking lot either. So that's coming. I just don't know what August is going to bring. Right now, if you ask me, what do you need right now? Just continued, I think, for us as hotspots. But later on, I mean, I can't tell you. We may need, I don't know, I may need over 1,000 thermometers. You read what people are telling me, and every teacher's got to take the temperature of every child when they come in school, and you got to take the temperature of every kid when they enter the building. And if this is going to be the new norm, I don't know about Jeff or Tony, but I don't have a closet full of thermometers or a junk. You know, these are the things that we just don't know, the materials that we'll need. The mask, is every kid going to require to have to wear a mask? Is every teacher going to wear a mask? Some of that type of equipment right now we don't have. We've got enough for our transportation folks, and we've got enough for our child nutrition folks, but that's about it. So Mr. Ramsey, I think Jeff summed it up real well. My needs today might not be my needs for tomorrow, and I can't even tell what my needs are going to be like in July or August. Because I really don't know what's happening, and I know that's so wishy-washy, but that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. I don't know about you, Tony.
Well, I agree with Jeff and Bo. It's, again, uncertainty is the consistent theme for all of us, but I would throw out next week, Nathan, is Teacher Appreciation Week. And so one thing I'd like to throw out, if anyone, your favorite teacher, and Drew, that includes you, who's a Buncombe County School graduate. You've got former teachers. I know that you recall. Reach out and say thank you. I think Bo and Jeff both said it very eloquently. You know, our teachers have moved into such a different world, and for some it was the twilight zone. And so as much as all of us can reach out and just say thank you and give them a pat on the back, because social emotional health is not only a concern that we have for our students, it's for ourselves and our staff. So reach out and say thank you next week.
And Tony, I think also tomorrow is School Lunch Hero Day. I think for anyone who school lunch program, child nutrition that we've been doing. So yes, celebrate our child nutrition, folks. I think right now it's kind of going under the radar on the amount of food and deliveries that we're making to the children. So Nathan, along as Tony said, next week is staff appreciation. Well, Friday, tomorrow is School Lunch Hero Week, and we need to celebrate. Every child nutrition director that I know right now, especially in Region 8, they're a hero. I can tell you that.
Absolutely.
And what would be the best way? Would that be to call that local school? Would it be to send an email? How would you suggest if people wanted to reach out to their local school and just say thanks to our nutrition staff, their teachers? What's the most effective way for them to do that?
I'm glad to pass along any information. If people want to send it to me directly, I'm glad to pass along to anyone, or you can contact schools. We just appreciate the thought and the support.
Okay, well, that's something that I think, you know, maybe we could, as a region, pull together and provide an opportunity, you know, to encourage people to reach out to their teachers, the support staff, and just let them know, you know, thank you. Just like, you know, people were thanking the healthcare workers and first responders and those that are working, you know, in our grocery stores and so many other critical jobs in our community that are stepping up in these difficult times. Dr. Bobby Short with Asheville City Schools and Dr. Gene Freeman, I think, were going to try to join us. They had a conflict, so if they're on the call on their phone, I cannot identify them now. So if Dr. Short or Dr. Freeman are on, I apologize. If you could send me a text to 828-768-3216, that's 828-768-3216, and let me, that way I'll know the number you're calling from. We can possibly, we'll try to unmute you and allow you to share today. Dr. Will Hoffman with Madison County Schools, I don't think he was able to join us. I want to turn over to Erica Anderson and Sarah Nichols with Land of Sky, Transylvania County, Henderson County, and Buncombe County Schools have all mentioned the importance of connectivity and helping students that do not have good broadband access at their homes. So I know Erica and Sarah are leading that effort on behalf of Land of Sky. And so I appreciate y'all taking time to join us and giving us an update on your work and the work with many other partners to try to meet the need that Superintendent McDerris, Superintendent Caldwell, and Superintendent Baldwin mentioned to us today.
Just got loud in my house. The Zoom school just ended, so I'll be brief. Thank you all and thanks Nathan for having us on. I think we've worked really hard to try to stay up with all the broadband and needs in the community, and Sarah's been leading most of those efforts, so I'll turn it over to her. I think one of the top priorities in our region is still broadband connectivity, even with all the work that has been done. So the last 4 years and our current situation with COVID-19 has really highlighted where some of those gaps are. So I look forward to hearing from a lot of you on where some of those priority areas can continue to be.
As Erica mentioned, we've been in this space for a while. In fact, when we recently put together our strategic plan, our SEDS for the last few years, broadband already was our second highest ranking priority. And at the top of what we typically do in that space is deployment and focus on how we get more broadband more places. And I would say that that's still probably the biggest thing that in this region that we need to see happen. It's just one of the most expensive and hardest to do. So when everyone kind of went on these stay-at-home orders, suddenly the concerns just escalated and were exacerbated. What was good about that is we finally had a conversation. We'd been working it in a while, and finally we could move some of the ideas that we had identified in profiles forward. The Dogwood Health Trust and some of our other partners came to us quickly to see what did we kind of have in our playbooks that could hook up more people and fast. And we got to ask these questions like, what does remote work look like? What does the social distance co-work space look like? And see where we can collaborate and innovate together to get some of these projects done. So on the front end, what we saw was that a lot of people who either had previously said they couldn't afford internet or weren't interested in it were starting to get hooked up. But the providers were giving us that information as suddenly the resources became available for some of those folks. And that helps them do more deployment and build that revenue model to escalate their systems in more places. So that's all good news. We also reached out to a lot of the schools and helped the Dogwood Health Trust get the data they needed to identify what y'all's needs were. How many hotspots were you lacking? Where are these gaps in coverage? And as a result, they did fund 10 buses in this area and 177 hotspots, which is fantastic, but we know that doesn't meet the need for you guys. That data was also used with the state to get the support that they needed to go to AT&T and Duke and Google and get those additional funding streams and information that we put in their hands. So we've been behind the scenes trying to get all this together so that those opportunities as they present themselves can start to happen for everyone. Another concern that we had kind of on the front end was that a lot of the public spaces people go to traditionally weren't open. Maybe the router's behind some cinder block wall right now, or the business just closed up and unplugged everything. A lot of the maps that we previously had that showed that kind of data were irrelevant. So we ramped up and kind of created our own. That's still a work in progress. You can go to our website, find it on our social media. It's called the LOS Wi-Fi Lot. Right now, we have a lot of government spaces have responded. We'd also like, oh, there it is. You can see across the region, we've had about 50 spaces respond that they're willing to offer this. We would love if more of the public spaces. So in Buncombe County, we've got a lot of libraries lit up. I'd love to see fire departments, churches, more schools, universities, especially all these places that have giant parking lots that just aren't used at the moment. These are great opportunities. If there's some barrier, like you needed a special piece of equipment to make it work, or you need an upgrade or router, booster, or some troubleshooting to protect yourself from cybersecurity, that's stuff that we might be able to help you with. And what we need is for people to help us get the places that people are connecting on that map for us. So if you know of a place people are going, be it still a McDonald's parking lot or a Starbucks, we want to get all that on there so that not just for educational reasons, but we've seen telehealth and remote work and our university systems, they all kind of flooded this at one time. So this map has had in, we released it officially publicly a week ago yesterday. It's had over 1,000 hits. It's much more well trafficked than we anticipated on the front end, which is kind of driving the need to show the community where all those places are. So I think my next phase of that will be trying to help some of the churches. I've been partnering with the Duke Endowment, which specifically likes to work with a lot of rural Methodist churches, and they've sent me extensive maps of where all those locations are in the region. So we're going to be looking to, if we know if churches already are in that space, yes, send them my way. We're going to strategically locate, because those churches are everywhere, ones that we think are going to be great partners.
Sarah, you mentioned some work, your partnerships with Dogwood Health Trust, and I think Dr. McNairis and some of the other superintendents mentioned placing a connector on a bus. Can you just sort of explain how that works? Because I know Dogwood added that capability to several buses. You know, you mentioned in our region, but certainly in all the 18 counties they serve.
So the Wi-Fi buses, that's not a new system, and we've been trying to promote that for a while, especially in our rural areas. You know, the signal kind of bounces off towers, but, and so it comes and it goes. But I know from experience that, you know, mountains can be in the way, trees, other sorts of infrastructure. The technology that they put on those buses is pretty stout, more so than you might have on your own house if you were trying to boost a signal from that location. But with the buses, you have to strategically place them in a place that connects two towers. And that, if that was a struggle to find those locations, I have some software and maps where we can help troubleshoot where they're gonna work the best. And then they can sit there. So if school was in session, those buses were happening, it would be great because kids could do homework on their way home. In this space, partnering it with the food delivery is a great resource. Parking it someplace where you know that those gaps in coverage are. Schools are really good at knowing that already. But we have done extensive data over the last few years. We did a survey that had nearly 9,000 responses across the region. So we're pretty well equipped to identify where those coverage gaps are for folks if they need to know how we can distribute those kinds of hotspots, public hotspots across the entire region and get the places that need them the most.
And I'll unmute the superintendents if y'all have any questions or any comments for Sarah and Erica. I know, you know, Mars Hill University has opened up their campus, so people can use that. I know Blue Ridge Community College was working on that as well. And I know several of the schools in our region are working to create Wi-Fi hotspots at those local schools. Dr. McDarius, Superintendent Caldwell, Superintendent Baldwin, do y'all have any comments, questions for Erica or Sarah?
I just say we appreciate all of these efforts. It's, you know, it's, I think Jeff and Bo would both agree. What's been gratifying from my standpoint is just seeing so many groups wanting to help, and hotspots is just one of those areas. But people have come forward and offered financial assistance, and it's just been amazing. I think that's part of the culture here in the mountains that we're so fortunate to have. We're not short on people wanting to help us out, Nate.
Sure, we're not. Absolutely. Go ahead, Dr. Superintendent Caldwell.
That's fine. I was want to say thanks. Thank you for all you do. You know, as superintendent, when we started talking about hotspots a year ago as far as budget, it was important, but it didn't move up. It was not high on our list. We had so many other things. And now in this age that we are, it is really moved up in the connectivity. And even what I'm hearing right now, and I don't know if it passes or not, but I'm hearing the General Assembly is looking to add virtual learn from home days in our calendar next year. As mandatory days. So therefore, if the General Assembly adds days to our calendar, but those days are at home doing some virtual, then this connectivity is now going to stay on the top of the list. This is not just a one-time. It didn't seem like, you know, at first we thought, man, I hate spending all that money on these hotspots because we'll get through this and we'll be back in school and things will be normal. But I'm not sure their name, and I'm not sure when things are going to be normal and how long it's going to take to get back to normal. So, yes, Sarah, thank you for all you do. I am not the most knowledgeable person as far as this technology and located, but I know, and I know you've reached out to my director of technology and because I know that he would like to have some dialogue with you as well at some point, because he knows a lot more about this and what we have done. Do he keeps me abreast, but he's the one that tells me everything I need to know. So,
all our schools here have been great partners, and I think one of the other things that I wanted to mention in the space of affordability. So this is areas that you could get connected, the service is there, but people aren't using it. And this would free up some supply chains, is making sure people know about the FCC's Lifeline program, which if you have kids who are on SNAP and some of the other government funded, they can get service for $9.95 a month, which might put some more folks in that they might not be able to afford $50 a month, but maybe they could afford 10 bucks a month. And if you can get some of those hotspots back, they can be redistributed. Also, something that probably just folks need to be reminded is like your cell phone can function as a hotspot too. And a lot of the companies have put out guidance about that they're not going to disconnect people and they're relieving data caps, which is a great addition to the other things that a lot of these companies have been providing. So I have on my to-do list, when I can get to it, to put out another one pager of an updated guidance of what these the providers are offering and what some of the opportunities might be, so that one by one we can start to get people connected.
Sarah, thank you for what you're doing. You've been great partners. We appreciate that. I think, you know, it's really, the more we scratch on the surface, we realize these things, and I know you do too. As we move forward, and I know you guys have always been great on this, but as we move forward, it's really more than just the connectivity and even the affordability. It's the type of connectivity. I don't know if anybody's noticed, but during this crisis with a lot of people at home, the internet's been running a little bit slower anyway. Mm-hmm. So you talk about the sheer volume of bandwidth. And when you're doing online instruction, for example, for us, and you utilize YouTube and other things, that pulls down a tremendous amount of bandwidth. And so, quality. I know quality is always expensive, but it really makes a difference. I mean, all of us have been to downtown Raleigh before, and probably like me, you salivate when you look at the speed that they're getting down there. And I don't get that at my house, and our local provider works very hard to try to do what they can. So it's not a criticism, but thank you for what you do. But I think when we talk about the connectivity, it's not just connectivity. It's the type of connectivity.
Do y'all see the challenges, I guess maybe in two different areas? One is for those individuals that live in rural areas that aren't served by a cable provider or others, and then there's really not a good option for them. But we also see, you know, individuals living in urban areas that are low income and they've struggled. So you know, I know there was a significant effort in Buncombe County to help those in the Asheville Housing Authority connect that had school children that were not being served. Do you see that in both populations, or is it a rural urban thing, or is it it's all over?
I think it's all over.
I say both. Yes.
We had one question about: do you think this effort more toward virtual learning would move us toward maybe a year-round school model? Have you thought about that? Or I know some of you have schools that were on a year-round model, is my understanding.
Well, I don't want to get in trouble about school calendar, Mr. Ramsey. You know from your experience in Raleigh that can be an interesting debate. But certainly, my biased point of view is if our schools, I believe our students have more creativity than anybody in the world, and our teachers do as well. The reality is, and again, this is just my opinion, but the reality is that if our nation is going to compete with other nations and we're going to be compared to certain other countries, take a look at how much schooling those other countries receive in comparison to us.
Does anyone else want to talk about Superintendent Caldwell's?
Well, yeah, I will say this, and this is the old guy speaking here. 34 years in this business, and I know virtual learning is what we've been doing for the last 7 weeks. But I think for everyone that's on this, you go back and you think about the teacher that impacted your life. It wasn't the lesson, it wasn't whether it was, you know, virtual or not virtual, it's a relationship that teacher had with that child. And how that student felt and how that teacher make that child feel that it's that strong relationship. And, you know, we talk as I have two schools that are year round. They're on a flex schedule. They're supposed to start basically the week in July. And right now that's an unknown. And we're talking as a board on, do we change the schedule or not? I think the beauty for us is virtual school worked well, but fortunately it was at the last 9 weeks and not the first 9 weeks. So those teacher-student relationships were already in place. They knew the children, they knew the strengths, they knew the weaknesses. I can't imagine a kindergartner trying to start off the year virtually. I can't imagine a sixth grader who has moved to the middle school trying to start out with four different teachers and those relationships are not there. So I agree, and it's interesting that the General Assembly is looking at putting virtual days in. I'm just not sure how many days need to be there, because I don't want it to feel like that the teacher can be replaced and just stand behind a computer, because to me there's a heck of a lot more that goes in education when that relationship between that child and that teacher happens. And that's just the old school coming out of me, I guess.
Yeah. I agree with you, Superintendent Caldwell. Dr. Baldwin.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm the oldest of these three guys. We're all old. But I've got to, you know, I agree with Bo and Jeff, but I do personally believe that this experience for our teachers with the virtual instruction piece, I think it's gonna make the overall quality of instruction improve. I think it's gonna be a resource that without any question, I believe we're gonna come back to in the future at various times. Maybe I'll be reading about it when I'm retired, but I think this is here to stay. But that said, Bo's exactly right. The virtual piece does not take the place of that face-to-face relationship building with the teachers and students. But I, you know, in all honesty, I can see some real positives that are coming out of this experience for us. And this is our first time around. We were all trying to catch up with Jeff over there with the virtual piece. But man, we got thrown in the middle of the water. So right now we've at least got nostrils up.
Well, there's a difference between closing for 4 days for a snowstorm and 6 weeks. So we're all struggling a little bit. But yeah, they're right. The art and craft of the teacher, I hope that we never, I'd love to have more instructional days in a year, but the art and craft of the teacher and that relationship can't be replaced. If you try to make it just online without the personal touch, I don't know that it's going to work well.
Are there any other thoughts from our superintendents with us? Again, we appreciate y'all taking time out of a incredibly busy schedule to join us. I think this has been very productive, and we certainly appreciate all your leadership on behalf of the 50,000 students in our public school, over 50,000 students in our public schools and our four county region, and on behalf of the community as well.
Thank you.
Just want to remind everyone that if you do want to reach out to our schools on their website, there's often a contact information. So I think for several of our systems, you can go on those websites and you can reach out directly through email. And if you have any questions, certainly you can reach out to us at Landa Sky, and we'll try to help make those connections. Erica and Sarah, I think they've added their email in the chat box, but they're certainly have done amazing work on behalf of our region and in this broadband space, and encourage you to reach out to them. And it's just erica@landasky.org, and then Sarah is S-A-R-A without the H, sarah@landasky.org. We appreciate Drew Christie with the governor's office. We'll see the updates from the budget process that the legislature is going through. Hopefully next week we'll have more clarity on that, and we'll be able to provide you some updates on that. If you have any topics that you would like us to include on these weekly calls, please share those with us. I think, you know, we're starting to see the light maybe at the end of the tunnel. It's maybe not the end of the story, but it's maybe the end of the beginning of the story. So we know this is a long road ahead, and we don't exactly know where this is headed, but we want to just keep our region informed, and so we can share information among everyone. We shared the Wi-Fi lot graphic on the screen during this call. You can go on the Landa Sky website, and that's posted on our website. We'll also place other resources on our COVID-19 page as well. So we want to thank everyone for joining us today, and hopefully you can join us at our call next week as well. But we'll give you back the rest of your day, and stay safe. And again, thank you to everyone for all that you do for our community.
Thank you. Thank you, Nate. Appreciate you, buddy.